And this is another instance, comes in the pastime of Ambarish Maharaj. And Ambarish Maharaj's interaction with Durvasa Muni, which highlights many different aspects of Krishna consciousness, and I can't get into all the details. Even as it is, I didn't write down all the details that Acharya's comment. But the background is, as you probably know, that Ambarish Maharaj is fasting. Ambarish Maharaj happens to be the king of the earth, and his capital is in Mathura. So he lives in Mathura, and he is observing Ekadasi. And in order to break Ekadasi, everyone has to break Ekadasi at a particular time. But he has a visitor. Durvasa Muni comes along with his many disciples. And so when you have a guest, you can't eat before you actually honor a guest. So the proper thing is that you host your guests, you sit them down, you offer them water to drink, offer them something to eat after they've eaten everything. Then a host can eat, especially if your guest happens to be someone like Durvasa Muni, who, say, for all intents and purposes, is a yogi. He's a very important person. And he's sort of a Vaishnava yogi. He becomes more of a Vaishnava after this all takes place. But here he's referred to as a yogi. And you happen to be a king, which means that not only are you responsible for giving a nice reception, but you're also setting a proper example for everybody else. And of course the whole kingdom is aware, or at least the capital here in Mathura, everyone's in where Durvasa Muni is coming, because wherever Durvasa Muni goes, usually there's trouble. He always causes some kind of disturbance. So we see the same situation as say with the Pandavas. So he invited him to come and eat, and Durvasa Muni says, "Yes, I'll go take a bath, and then when I come back, then I will eat." But in the meantime, the time for breaking Ekadasi is decreasing, and of course this becomes one of the side issues of this pastime, is what's more important, hosting a guest or breaking Ekadasi? Read the book, you find out. And especially if you're just hosting a yogi. Maybe if you're hosting a pure devotee, that's a different situation. But it became obvious that Durvasa Muni wasn't going to come back in time for Ambarish Maharaj to be able to break his fast timely. So therefore he decided to drink water. And then it becomes another part of the, at least another lesson, is that, and Srila Prabhupada as well as Acharyas also quote this statement, that drinking water is both breaking a fast and not breaking a fast. So there are these convenient things that you can do, that sometimes you can break a fast just by drinking water, and you haven't actually necessarily transgressed the etiquette here of not eating. You break a fast, but you're not eating by drinking water. So on the advice of his Brahmin advisors, Ambarish Maharaj drinks a little water. Durvasa Muni finds out by his mystic power, he immediately understands. He gets extremely angry, and in order to teach Ambarish Maharaj a lesson, he wants to kill him. I'm talking about being a little extreme. So just somebody breaks their fast, or even if you consider, all right, Ambrish Maharaj ate before his guests, you don't kill somebody just because they ate before you, especially considering the circumstances. There are circumstances to warrant it. But Durvasa Muni has a problem, and his problem is anger. Vacho Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam. So, this Krodha Vegam, to be able to control anger. And of course, Krishna also says, Kama Esha, Krodha Esha. And why can't you control your anger? Because you're lusting. That's another issue. But Durvasa Muni is well known for his anger, and because of his anger, he causes a lot of disturbance to others, and he's also causes a lot of problems to himself. Anger is always one of those things, Trividha Naraka Shedam Kama Krodha Patagoba. So Krishna says this is one of the three gates leading to hell. Anger should be controlled. And so he invokes some kind of mysterious demon made of fire to kill Ambarish Maharaj. So really, really extreme. You can see how powerful these personalities were. He was so powerful, he just takes a piece of his hair. And Durvasa Muni, ultimately, he's an Amsa of Lord Shiva. That's where he gets all this, where this anger is coming from. So, and he also is empowered by Lord Shiva, and he throws this hair on the ground, and that hair turns into a fiery demon, and he instructs that demon to kill Ambarish Maharaj, who does nothing. He's just like Prahlad Maharaj. He doesn't try to protect himself. Obviously, running somewhere would have not necessarily been of any help. But in any case, Ambarish Maharaj, he didn't think, oh, why is he doing this? He just thought, I've transgressed the proper etiquette, and this is the way the yogi wants to punish me. All right, let him punish me. And he was willing to accept that. Now, as the history goes, and Bhagavatam says that Sudarshan Chakra appeared. Sudarshan Chakra didn't just appear. Ambarish Maharaj was already so dear to the Lord that Krishna had already given him the Sudarshan Chakra for his personal protection. Because Ambarish Maharaj was always like this. He was so absorbed. So I'm not Krishna Padaravindaya. He was so absorbed in devotional activities that he wouldn't make any extraneous effort to protect himself, which is not a good thing for a king. Because a king means he has to keep law and order. And keeping law and order means he has to confront others. So in order to give him protection, the protection was given to him. Sudarshan Chakra was always there. And of course, as soon as this demon appeared, then Sudarshan Chakra disposed of it. And because Sudarshan is Krishna's own personal weapon, and in the way that, of course, Krishna expands himself into different incarnations. Similarly, Sudarshan also has different forms. The Sudarshan that Lord Narayan has in his expansion of Krishna's Sudarshan, and so on. So similarly, this also expansion of Sudarshan Chakra, but there's no power to actually match the power of that Sudarshan. But Sudarshan Chakra wasn't satisfied just by removing this obstacle in front of Maharaj Ambarish. In other words, getting rid of this fiery demon who was going to kill Maharaj Ambarish. But he started actually pursuing Durvasa Muni. And the reason he does that is described here in one of the concluding verses, This is, by the way, this is in the ninth chapter, ninth canto, fourth chapter, where these verses come from. And the Lord says the following, which is something that we should always keep in mind. He says, one's so-called prowess, when employed against the devotee, certainly harms he who employs it. Thus it is the subject, not the object, who is harmed. So when someone addresses some type of malevolent energy against a Vaishnava, ultimately it becomes that person who is the person who suffers. So Sudarsan Chakra starts to chase Durvasa Muni. And Durvasa Muni is an extraordinary mystic, so much so that not only is he running throughout the universe, but it seems that he actually goes beyond the boundaries of the universe. We know that he's a Brahmavadi, so he has access to the Brahmajyoti. And Prabhupada writes that he also goes to Vaikuntha. What that specifically means there's not that much information on, but I was trying to do some research, and I won't get into too much detail. Maybe if we touch on what it is that Durvasa Muni actually sees when he meets Lord Narayan, we'll discuss it then. But anyway, obviously Durvasa Muni is fleeing for his life because he knows that he can't match the power of the Sudarsan Chakra. So he goes to Lord Brahma, he goes to Lord Shiva, he's fleeing everywhere throughout the universe, no one can give him any shelter. Ultimately, they all say, we can't help you. And finally, he goes to Vaikuntha planet. And when he comes to the Vaikuntha planet and he asks for shelter to Lord Narayan, and he falls in front of Lord Narayan for protection. And ultimately, Lord Narayan says, sorry, I can't help you. There's nothing I can do. And of course, the rest of me says, but this is your weapon. You can call your weapon off. He says, no, I can't. Because that weapon is not specifically under my control. It's acting to protect Durvasa Muni, and I can't interfere in these type of activities. And at this point, Durvasa Muni, he doesn't understand. He doesn't understand how is it that the Supreme Lord can do something or won't do something. And that's where this book comes in. This is starting from chapter 460, I can't remember, 62, 63, I don't remember which, 63, verse 63. And this conversation goes on before exchange that the devotees can follow up on. But here the essence is, Lord Narayan, because you don't understand what the relationship is between me and my devotees. It says, and so I can't withdraw the Sudarsan Chakra because I'm not independent of my devotees. I'm actually the property of the Vaishnavas, and I belong to them. So that's where... And these are verses that devotees, especially some of these verses, are important for devotees to know. In if you look at Srila Prabhupada's, in the folio, Prabhupada's folio, you'll see that particularly this one, verse 63, then later on 68, these are verses that are oft quoted by Srila Prabhupada, they're quoted by acharyas, they're repeatedly quoted in different places to emphasize this thing, how Krishna is purchased by his devotees. Now, up to now, even Prahlad Maharaj didn't say, Nrisimhadev didn't say any such thing publicly about Prahlad Maharaj. This is like a public declaration. It's being stated here in Srimad Bhagavatam. So up until now, we see different incarnations, different pastimes take place, but nowhere is it that Krishna is making such a public declaration of how he loves his devotees. So he says, Aham bhakta parayino. He says, I'm completely under the control of my devotees. Indeed, I'm not at all independent, because my devotees are completely devoid of material desires. I sit within the core of their hearts. What to speak of my devotee? Even those who are devotees of my devotees are very dear to me.